The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, Chodesh Tov. Yeah, good. Thank you. I hope you guys are doing well. Always interesting things going on here. Of course, with the coalition and with external politics, so there's a lot to talk about this morning.
There is indeed, but I want to start where we where we left off yesterday, and that is, I think, an amazing achievement, and so relevant to South Africa, which is why I think it's important to talk about this. By next year, the Arava region in southern Israel will be entirely reliant on solar energy for its daytime electricity use. That is phenomenal, you know, as the world migrates to renewable energy. Tell us what's happened here.
So there is obviously a lot of focus on renewable energy in Israel as well. Israel is growing at such a huge rate that it's very, very difficult to keep up in general with the infrastructure needs, including electricity and, of course, including water. And so Israel's had to be very creative in coming up with solutions to, first of all, provide for the huge increase in the required amount of electricity and water, also to provide it at a very attractive cost, and of course at the same time to try as much as possible to preserve the environment. And so in the context of that, the Israeli government, together with some local solar energy providers, entered into an agreement to use the Arava region as a kind of example and something which can then be potentially expanded to the rest of Israel in order to try to harvest the huge amount of sunlight that is obviously prevalent in that desert region. And they had the initial goal of 100% daytime solar energy by 2020. Obviously, the issue of nighttime electricity is a little bit more complicated. And so at least to achieve the objective of being able to supply all of that region's energy needs during daytime hours arising from renewable solar energy. And it seems as if though the Arava is well on the way to achieve that. The Arava region, of course, also includes the city of Eilat. So even though it is a relatively limited region in terms of population, one cannot ignore the fact that Eilat is part of that. And of course, Eilat has its own significant energy needs. But that the entire country, the objective is that the entire country will be reliant only on solar energy during daytime hours, 100% by 2030. So in another 10 years from now, which I think is a very, very substantial and challenging target to try to achieve. But the good news is that there are a number of different Israeli solar energy providers, some of which are doing, you know, really amazing work around the world, not only in Israel, companies like SolarEdge, and there are some others as well that are doing some amazing work. I mean, just to summarize some of the challenges that these guys, the people who have been implementing the solar energy solutions find, the main challenge is really to make it attractive, to make it palatable, aesthetic in terms of putting these solar energy panels up, and also to find enough space to put the solar energy panels up without taking over the rest of the country. And for people who visited Israel, people will have already noticed that using solar energy in residential areas for hot water is already very, very prevalent. I would say, you know, more than 80% of the country probably uses solar energy panels. You see them on the roofs of every house and every apartment building for the use of hot water, at least during daytime hours and at least during the summer period, of course, when hot water is less required anyway. But that can easily then be ramped up. And there are a lot of people now putting solar energy panels on their roofs in order to generate electricity. And some of them are generating electricity more than their own requirements, and so therefore they are selling it back to the national grid for the grid to be able to use it for other purposes as well. And currently the goal that Israel has set itself in the short term is to try to emulate what Germany is doing and achieve 17% of solar energy used during daytime hours out of solar power. So that seems to be the short-term solution. But obviously in 10 years or 11 years from now, to try and get up to 100%. So there's a lot of work going on in that region right now in order to, first of all, grow Israel's energy supply, and second of all, of course, to use renewable energy for that purpose.
It's absolutely unbelievable and so vital. You know, in South Africa, we're dealing with electricity constraints, which we really shouldn't have to. We've got both a tremendous amount of sun and in many regions a wind as well, which is a perfect combination in summer and winter. So an amazing example of Israeli innovation and their quest towards renewable energy. All right, less interesting but probably as important, a coalition update. Where are we? The main protagonists in the coalition building exercise were occupied in meetings, international dignitaries yesterday. Are we running two governments? What is going on here now?
Well, sort of. I mean, you know, and I think that that's what the interesting thing is, even though there doesn't seem to have been any real progress in building a government as such, it was interesting that both Benny Gantz and Prime Minister Netanyahu are now being wheeled out in front of dignitaries who are visiting Israel. And yesterday it was the turn of Jared Kushner, of course, the member of the U.S. administration who's trying to put together the peace agreement, some sort of a framework for peace between not only Israel and the Palestinians, but even further afield in terms of the wider Arab the wider Arab nations. And Jared was in Jerusalem yesterday. He met first with Benny Gantz. Interestingly, the meeting took place at the Jerusalem U.S. Embassy location, which is in Rehov HaGuron, not too far away at all from the Prime Minister's residence. So the Gantz meeting was held at the U.S. Embassy. It was held in the presence of U.S. Ambassador David Friedman. It was also Benny Gantz was also accompanied by Yair Lapid. And of course, Jared Kushner was the main focus of the meeting, together with Benny Gantz. And then soon after that, the party, the U.S. party, left and went up the road to the Prime Minister's residence, which is really just almost within walking distance from that embassy location in Jerusalem. And there they sent out their standard video that they have put out to the press, apparently this time the video didn't have any sound. But once again, it was U.S. Ambassador to Israel David Friedman, together with Jared Kushner. And of course, they were also joined by the Israeli head of national security, meeting at the Prime Minister's residence. And the U.S. Embassy was very cautious to put out press releases about both of those meetings. So it almost does feel as if, though, there are two parallel governments. I don't know if the word government is correct, but certainly two parallel groups that are being run at the moment, with both a group having the turn to meet with all these foreign dignitaries. In the case of Prime Minister Netanyahu, who was meeting Israel's ambassador to the U.S., Ron Dermer, was also present, along with the National Security Advisor, Meir Ben-Shabbat. And, of course, the handshake that Prime Minister Netanyahu got from Jared Kushner was a lot warmer than the one that Benny Gantz got. That was quite noticeable in the press releases that were – the videos that were released by the press, by the U.S. Press. Of course, Kushner still getting to know Benny Gantz a little, and who knows whether that relationship is going to have to be a lot warmer than it is right now. And of course, there's also the meeting that's going on at the moment of the Board of Governors of the Jewish Agency that is taking place, that took place yesterday and today. And of course, there is a conference taking place, Jewish Agency, World Zionist Organization conference. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu yesterday addressed leaders from around the world. He addressed the issue of the rising threat of anti-Semitism, and he did acknowledge and commit that the Israeli government will transfer further budget money that will be required for use in protecting Jewish communities around the world against the scourge of anti-Semitism. And of course, Benny Gantz will today have the opportunity to meet with the Board of Governors from the Jewish Agency, from the World Zionist Organization. So he will also have his turn to meet these quite important leaders, even though they come from outside Israel, but they do have a lot of influence into how the Israeli government views, the general Jewish community, and of course, Benny Gantz will be keen to hear what they have to say. Of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu, in his address, while mentioning this issue of anti-Semitism and really spending a lot of time trying to address it, was, of course, eager to point out that Israel's main challenge is called Iran, and that Iran is seeking to destroy Israel. And, of course, a strong Israel is important, as he puts it, for a strong Jewish community around the world. So that's where we seem to leave things at the moment on the issue of the coalition, because both of those individuals were involved in other meetings. And we'll see what happens today if any further progress is made in trying to put a coalition together.
Yeah, no doubt, an ongoing story. This is also an interesting one. Hamas is reported to have agreed to participate in an election that is being pursued by the Palestinian Authority. Is there a real prospect of a Palestinian election being held soon, Anthony?
Good question. I mean, they're certainly making noise as if though they intend to hold an election. And in fact, it was Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas who announced this intention at the UN General Assembly last month, of all places, where he called upon the UN actually to monitor the vote. And that was an interesting kind of stick your neck out situation, because having announced it on the international stage at the UN General Assembly, one imagines that that means he actually intends to pursue it. And to be fair, since then, the chairman of the Central Elections Committee, the Palestinian Central Election Committee, has been in Gaza to talk with leaders of Hamas and indeed other factions who are present in Gaza, because the election is supposed to cover not only the Palestinian Authority area in the West Bank, but also apparently will be held in East Jerusalem. That's an interesting one of itself, and we can talk a little bit more about that, but also elections to be held in Gaza. Interestingly, the last time that parliamentary elections were held along amongst the Palestinian community was back in 2006. So obviously they don't have a very positive record for holding regular elections. And the question is whether this exercise that's going on at the moment is just another kind of exercise to try and placate the international community, who are clearly calling for elections within the Palestinian Authority area. And I just wondered to myself whether the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas really has any interest to call an election, because it's unclear whether his party, Fatah, and whether he himself, well, it's not unclear whether he plans to stand. I mean, he is in his 80s now and is reported not to have been in very good health. So there are some questions about whether he himself would be prepared to make himself available for another period to continue the work. And if not, who might succeed him within the Fatah organization? These are all questions which are being asked, because the obvious successor from the Palestinian street, at least, for Fatah actually happens to be sitting in an Israeli jail. And the most popular successor on the Palestinian street would be Marwan Barghouti, of course, who couldn't really run the Palestinian Authority from jail. And so it's not very clear who would then succeed Abbas. And indeed, it's not clear whether he, as the leader of Fatah, has the interest to call an election, because it's not that obvious that Fatah will do too well in this election. Whereas Hamas in Gaza seem to be quite strong in their view, quite confident that they would do well in an election, because otherwise they would never have agreed to participate in the first place. Mm. That's the only way that I can really interpret what's going on. But the question as to whether this election is going to be held at all is, of course, a very valid one. So we will just be watching from the sidelines to see how things develop. Certainly no election is planned within the next month or two, whether, you know, within the next, say, 6 months, whether we could really reasonably expect an election is really a subject that's up for discussion. And I think there's a lot of water to flow under this bridge yet.
Yeah, there's not a great track record of that at all. Before I let you go, exactly 25 years have passed since a peace treaty was signed between Jordan and Israel. How is this peace treaty viewed with the benefit of hindsight, Anthony?
Well, it all depends who you ask, I guess. I mean, the peace treaty we remember was signed, for some of us remember, at least, was signed, you know, on the White House lawn back in 1994. King Hussein, late Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, and of course President Clinton were the main actors on that particular stage. I think for Israel, the peace treaty has been absolutely critical and has certainly been better than no peace treaty. It's certainly not been a warm peace treaty, and it's had a lot of problems. I think that when you look at it from the Jordanian side, they really have to ask themselves whether this peace treaty has been worth their while, because there's so many different factors that have entered into it from the Jordanian side, because at that time back in 1994, they had to make a choice between whether they were putting their eggs in the basket of the Arab nations or whether they were going more towards Israel and the US. And at that time, those were two kind of mutually exclusive options that they were having to consider. And I think overall, they've probably benefited economically from a lot of aid that the US has provided to them as a result of them agreeing to sign this treaty. And I think that they've also benefited from having peace along the border. But I think they've also given up on their relationship to some degree with the Arab nations and the Arab League, something which I think is returning now, because these days it seems to be more acceptable to have a relationship both with the Arabs as well as with the US and with Israel. Who knows how that will, progress from here, but certainly something that's worth considering looking back on 25 years of peace with Jordan.
Absolutely right. Anthony Reich, it is 8 o'clock. This is Where We Love and Leave You. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning, same time, same place at 7:45. Here's your news with Sanati.